Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello, and I am telling you, I am really looking forward to my conversation this evening with my guest, Murray Wadsworth. And the reason I am so looking forward to it is we're going to talk about guys. We're going to be talking about prostate cancer. We're going to be talking about health issues that men are told that if they live long enough, this is what they're going to be experiencing. And my guest, Murray Wadsworth, after the journey that he has traveled, decided that he was going to write about his experience of dealing with prostate cancer. Is it a sheep or a wolf? Murray, I want to welcome you to the show.
Well, thank you, Donna. Pleasure to be here.
Your cover is most intriguing because half of the cover on the page shows half of a sheep's face. The other half shows half of a wolf's face. It's a very powerful cover. And you yourself have been an entrepreneur. You're a businessman. You have had so many wonderful things in your life. You've got a beautiful family. There's all kinds of things that you have been able to enjoy. But something happened. How did you find out that you had cancer of the prostate?
I had done years of screening for prostate cancer and my overall health, just to be sure I was healthy, not only for myself, but I was the solo parent of my two children after a divorce when they were quite young. So I wanted to be sure I was healthy. And I had had about 10 years of confusing screening going on with the prostate cancer, but was not concerned. And I was living and working in England, and time came up for my annual checkup. And I decided to have it done over there. And things are done differently. And they immediately found the tumor that had been missed previously.
Now, how much time had passed between the last PSA test that you had had and the one where there was a tumor that was found?
Really a short amount of time because I test for the PSA, the prostate-specific antigen, on my own, and I had started to trend up again. So for years, my PSA had gone up and gone down and then gone back up and gone down again, and we ignored it because it kept going down. But in the year of 2014, I went up consecutively four times over a six-month period. So I was concerned, and that's what brought about the doctor's appointment there.
We are all, as a nation, and even internationally, we are very much aware of how breast cancer has evolved through the last 20 years to being a huge fundraising platform. But we don't hear about men that get breast cancer. And yet, there are men that have gotten breast cancer. It's as if, well, let's focus on the women, but we're not going to focus on the men. And there are so many things that go on, and I would suspect, because I know a member of my family was being diagnosed with prostate cancer and was suffering from a number of other ailments, and I recall the physician at the time saying, it's not even worth doing the testing. It's not going to be the prostate cancer that kills you. What is going to be is something else because you have some other major issues. The attitude in the American system for men, this is really quite challenging. What is the biggest difference? Because you were working with people in England. What was the biggest difference in the attitude of the physicians in England relative to the physicians in the United States?
The physicians in England, and I also worked with some in France and the Netherlands and Belgium, they focus on diagnostics first rather than a rush to treatment. And they want to have as good of a chance as possible for a cure. And so they take a bit of time and they do a fair amount of imaging and a few other tests that give them the best outlook. The other difference is the system over there, we oftentimes refer to it as socialized medicine. But one profound difference in the systems is that the doctors there working under their national healthcare systems are essentially salaried, and they work in a general sense 8 to 5. They don't, and they have a quota that they must meet, minimum quota, and all of that really works adequately well. But they're not financially motivated to do one more surgery or take on one more radiation patient. So they don't look at patients as revenue. Now, I was seeing them as a private paying patient, which meant they would get revenue from me, but they weren't motivated by that.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually found a number of the doctors saying that their methods were not the best for me, and they would refer me to someone else. And I saw them, in an American sense, lose money. But those are the two differences, very mm-hmm. diagnostic-oriented, and then they're not revenue-driven.
I was really fascinated with the BMI information. You said the BMI was never intended to be used for individuals. It was developed by Adolf Cutellet in the early 19th century, and he called it social physics and the health of populations. You know, we have adopted things through the generations, and they don't fit in today's world. And we seem to, in the United States, take a long time to really pay attention to what's going on in other parts of the world. And it saddens me because when it comes to the well-being of people, male or female, what can we do to take on a demeanor of, let's look at what we can do for you so that you're going to have the healthiest physical vehicle possible? If there's something evolving, let's look at bringing the body into balance instead of being fearful. You know, there's such a different feel. And I was surprised when you talked about a genetic profiling test called Oncotype DX. I'd never heard of it. What is that test all about?
That was fascinating. So it is done for men in England for prostate. It's also done for women for breast cancer. Oncotype DX is one of several brands that are available. It comes from a company in the United States, but it was not available here back in 2014, 2015, and 2016, not even mentioned to me by a doctor. And when I asked to have the test done, my insurance, as is commonly done, turned it down.
Mm-hmm.
This is the U.S. insurance. And in the letter of denial, they said they never expected it to be approved. Fortunately, since then, it has been approved. And it is, but it's not within most doctors' purview of understanding. They weren't schooled on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not part of general practice, but it is an indicator. It's genomic, not genetic. It's an indicator of how aggressive the cancer may be. And its accuracy is considered to be very, very high. And so when you're looking at prostate cancer, and they have been looking at breast cancer this way now for a number of years, we know that some of the cancers are not really aggressive. Hence why I sort of called them the sheep in the book.
Mm-hmm.
But then, of course, we all are aware of very aggressive cancers. It's crucial to know this with prostate cancer. And the genomic test is a very accurate way of determining. And this is based on a biopsy sample that is done, which is part of the original diagnosis. And mine came back low intermediate, which was cause to be patient and to not be overly concerned. But what I later learned is because my biopsy missed the worst parts of the tumor, we underscored on the Oncotype DX. So that, but the doctors here didn't really understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting. We're getting there. The good news is we're getting there, but it's crucial. And it was, again, it was standard practice in England, as was the MRI that was done even before the biopsy.
Well, I know that there is also something called thermography, and I don't know if that would have any influence on the prostate gland, but I know when they do that for women, if there's something occurring in the soft tissues of the body, it will show up. And this is something that, again, I don't know if that type of a process would work for men. However, one of the many points that you bring out in your book, Prostate Cancer, Sheep or Wolf, is that whatever is done, your prostate cancer is never going to be totally gone. It is something that may come back. I have known men that have had a very aggressive prostate situation, and they were so sick with all the treatments, the chemotherapy, the radiation, all of this stuff that they had to go through, and it almost did them in. And they survived it, and they're very grateful for that, but they're very, very weak. The side effects still affect them 4 years later from what they went through with the treatment. But it's really something. Now, you described the prostate gland as the barn, the area surrounding the gland as the barnyard, the lymph nodes as checkpoints, and the blood vessels as the highway to distant organs, metastasis, incurable disease. Let's cover that for a moment.
Certainly. When I started to delve into all of this and try and understand it, so I did a lot of reading and talked to a lot of doctors, and I had the privilege and the ability to do it both here in the U.S. and in England, where I had a business. And the medical terms were a lot to take in and to understand, and I found a vagueness in them. And you quickly are told about the concern for recurrence. But I kept trying to understand, if we've removed the tumor, if we've taken the prostate out, how can it come back if we got all of it? But that is what we call it, is recurrence, when in fact it was still there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just thought of it as the prostate is the barn, and if the sheep or the wolf is in the barn and has not left and we take it out, then we have to get all the cancer. And that was clear to me in my thinking. Then, but if it got out and it can get out through the bloodstream or the lymph node system, that can be more difficult for the doctors to determine. You still have chances if it's localized in the pelvic region. Once it moves beyond that, through either the bloodstream or the lymph node system, to what they call distant organs, which is really, it could be just the hip bones. And it's oftentimes where it goes first. So it's not very far, but they use the term distant. But I'm like, well, how far can it go, my head or my toes? So I simplified it this way in my thinking. And each time I consulted with doctors, and I consulted with many doctors, perhaps too many, I would ask them, what do you think? Do you think it's out of the barn? Do you think it's in the barnyard? Do you think it's at the cross checkpoints? And they wouldn't know how to talk to me, is what I found interesting. Except over in Europe, they could talk to me at a very clear level. And that's where I learned that when they go to do the surgery for a man in Europe, if they had the least bit of concern for spread, if it's just even remotely outside of the prostate gland, and they base this decision in part on imaging, they will take out what's called the common iliac lymph nodes first. These are the checkpoints. And they'll immediately do a freeze-dried biopsy while you're there on the operating table. And if they find cancer there, then they know they have spread, and they will act accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't find cancer at those checkpoints, then they will concentrate moving back to the prostate, believing it's more localized.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk for a minute about something I had never heard of, and that is a nanoparticle MRI. How did you find out about that, and what country did you end up going into to have the test done?
This was a great bit of fortune, of good luck. So after I had my prostatectomy, we quickly knew that it did not get all the cancer based on the PSA testing. So I went for the salvage radiation therapy. That was here in the U.S. in Austin, Texas, where I'm from. That also did not get it all. And so in the book, I called it Between a Rock and a Hard Place is the name of the chapter. So the recommendation here in the U.S. is chemotherapy and hormone-blocking drugs, which you referenced earlier, which are harsh. And for prostate cancer, they are not curative at all.
Uh-huh.
The purpose is to try and slow the cancer down. And I did not want to go there. I just didn't believe that I needed to be there yet. But I had a very low PSA, and the available imaging would not identify where the cancer was. And it could have been localized to the prostate bed, as they call it, or the barnyard, as I refer to it. Or it could have actually been in other parts of my body, but not yet presenting me with pain, so we didn't know it was there. And a dear friend of mine, Carol, from England, a doctor, was talking to a friend of hers who she and her husband are imaging specialists of the prostate in England. And they were discussing my case, and they said, you need to go get the nanoparticle MRI. And none of us, we didn't know what that was, but they referred us to Professor Borens in the Netherlands. And sent him an email, and he immediately starts communicating with me and was very confident that we could have successful imaging. And so off I went.
Mm-hmm. What did they do with that test? What was that test like?
Just a regular MRI that a man or a woman gets for any number of things. I had an MRI on my knee a couple years ago, and it wasn't really any different. So you're in a chamber, and they use contrast agents, and that's what they call the nanoparticle. They now call it Ferritran. And so it's an injection, and you're injected a day before the actual imaging that's done. And you're in the chamber about 30 minutes, and the results are readily available. You know, here in the U.S., we often have to wait, and they immediately look at them, and they immediately give you an opinion. Straight away of what they have found. They don't need much time, as it turns out.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew within just a couple of days we had the actual film in hand that I had five lymph nodes identified as suspicious for cancer. They identify it as suspicious because it's not technically diagnostic. That's a biopsy.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so the interesting thing about the nanoparticle MRI is it actually originated under the name of Combidex. And if one researches that, we find out that it was here in the U.S. in the 1990s that this technique, this contrast agent was used, but it did not get approval here. But the Europeans picked it back up, and it's now being used widespread across Europe.
Fascinating. There were a number of things that you mention in your book, Prostate Cancer, Sheep or Wolf, where the U.S., for whatever reason, dropped the ball, you know, the FDA, which they get all kinds of submissions. They're literally getting thousands of submissions every day. And with what we go through, like with the COVID, then there's a tremendous shortage of staff. And this is something, that particular test really is going to be very proactive in being able to diagnose certain things so that you then can go to the next level. Now, with you, there was a tumor that was very close to the urethra, and there was a big concern there because there could be surgery done that would cause incontinence. Now, the human body is incredibly sophisticated, and it's packed very tightly together. So there's all kinds of issues that come up with this. How did you work with that? What was your next step?
Back when I was trying to decide how to have my first treatment, and this is before the nanoparticle in the Netherlands, I did not want surgery for all of the fear reasons that men have. We hear constant negative news about the outcomes of surgery.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the imaging that I had done in London at that time called multiparametric MRI, which is now becoming available in the U.S. A lot of times the men have to ask for it because, again, the doctors aren't familiar with them. But the multiparametric MRI showed the location of the tumor, and it was clear to the radiation doctors that I had seen in England and HIFU, which is now available in the U.S. It's a high-frequency ultrasound, if you will, in a simplistic term. So I was seeing a doctor in England that was doing this. Both of them said the tumor's too close to these parts of your urinary tract, and we cannot get clear margins. So we'll leave cancer behind or do severe damage trying to get it all. And they all recommended that I have surgery. It became very difficult to get surgeons in the U.S. to look at the imaging. They just don't do that. And the surgeon I actually chose in the U.S. was because he studied the imaging. And he became confident that he could work around the difficult location of the tumor and spare my urinary tract and get all of the tumor. And he did. He was successful at that. And I have no incontinence issues at all from that surgery. But had I not had the imaging, I think the outcome would have been very different.
Mm-hmm.
I've since learned for a lot of men who come out of this procedure incontinent, a lot of times they just want to blame the doctors. But in reality, the cancer has spread into these other areas. And there's no choice.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to get the cancer out, you have to take, like the sphincter valve has to come, and then you're going to have more serious issues with continence.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right, now, what's an HIFU? That apparently is a particular test that was approved here in the United States in 2015. What is that?
That's HIFU.
That's HIFU, okay.
That's HIFU, and it's a treatment process. In a common sense, it's another variation of radiation.
Mm-hmm.
It's unclear if it's going to continue to be used with a lot of success. And that's what I looked at in England in 2015 because it was not approved yet here in the U.S. Men were getting it in the U.S., but they had to go to Mexico to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And they would travel down there with doctors from America, but it couldn't be practiced here. It is now. And the results are coming forward. What I find interesting is in England and other European countries, they focus first on the imaging. That is what drives the decision to what treatment to use. Whereas here, if you talk to CyberKnife, which is a variation of radiation, and I did, they're like, oh, we can take care of you. We can do it. And they don't look at imaging. I did talk to a HIFU doctor in the U.S., and he said, oh, I can do it. And he didn't look at the imaging. But the CyberKnife doctor in London and the HIFU doctor in London said our method won't work for you because of where your tumor is located.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they referenced the surgery. That's HIFU. It's another variation. But an important thing that I learned is if a man chooses radiation or he chooses seeding or he chooses HIFU, they still longer term run risk of side effects. They're just not as immediate as it would be with surgery.
Mm-hmm.
But when they radiate these areas, they're radiating critical parts of our urinary tract and of our sexual function. So there's going to be damage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's very important to be aware of. You also have the proscision, the proven cure with no cutting. Now, that's very dramatic. What is it?
It's radiation.
Okay. And Dr. Frank Kritz is the gentleman who is the founder of Prostrcision. That's PROSTRCISION. And was this something that you gave a consideration to? I was amazed at how thorough he was with you.
Very thorough. Wonderful written reports and recommendations. It's another thing that comes from the doctors over in Europe. When you meet with them, they give you written letters afterwards of the consultation so that you don't have to remember everything or get everything right. And it's very, very useful. And Dr. Chris gave me that and statistics based on my test results and estimations of the success rate and the side effects. That particular method is radiation combined with seeding.
Mm-hmm.
I chose to not do it for two reasons. One was, again, the imaging raised questions as to whether we would get what they call the margin. That's the safety area around where they're treating. And then there was also a change in healthcare insurance at that time, and I lost the ability to choose my doctors across the country.
Mm-hmm. Now, you did go back to, you know, you were in England and in, you know, in the Netherlands, and you had consultations with different doctors. You were here in the United States. You left England. You closed your business over there. You came back over here. You have your family here. And in going through all of that, this had to have been quite a challenge. Now, your friend Carol, Dr. Carol Wyatt, was very, very supportive of you and so many other people. And you had these individuals that really wanted you to know as much as possible about the treatments that you could have so that you have a probability of being able to have a quality of life and not being afraid that, you know, you're going to die in the next 30 seconds.
Right. I am most fortunate for the people that have helped me and educated me. I think the various doctors in England and France and the Netherlands and Belgium, they take an interest in American patients because they learn firsthand from us the differences in the countries and the approaches. So that is part of it, where there's a novelty involved. When I was having the nanoparticle MRI in the Netherlands, and I'm from Texas, so they wanted to know how many horses I had, and did I ride my horse to work? And they were not kidding. You know, they sort of just have this idea. And that does create an opportunity for a little more personalized care.
Mm-hmm.
And an exchange of information. But yes, the folks are very helpful to me, and that's ultimately why I wrote this book and self-published it and try to get it out to them in any number of ways. Because the information is there if you can find it, if your doctor doesn't give it to you. And the techniques that I had done in Europe are becoming available in the U.S. We now have what's called the PSMA PET and the F-18 PET. They're not quite as sensitive as the nano, but they're quite good. And they've been approved now in the U.S. The FDA has approved them. It's taking time to roll them out. This is a big country.
Mm-hmm.
One can talk about England and France and the Netherlands, and it sounds perhaps overwhelming, but it's much easier to travel to four or five countries over there than it is just to get out of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's the truth.
We have to keep those things in mind. When I drove for the surgery in Belgium from the house in France, it's a 6-hour drive. That's not particularly far on a U.S. scale.
Mm-hmm.
So we now have the PSMA here. In fact, I'll be getting one next month in Houston. I'm looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
We're still thinking I've got a bit of the cancer lingering because I'm testing every month now on the PSA test. And although my numbers are well below the U.S. guidelines, that's another area where we differ. The U.S. does not identify recurrence until a higher level on the PSA test than they do in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So my number is beginning to tick up. So I've been approved for the PSMA. I got a waiver below the standard guidelines for approval. So I have that coming up. But men have this now. So the multiparametric MRI is here in the U.S., as is the PSMA PET and the F-18 PET.
Well, I think that your information in the book is very important. I appreciated a comment that you made. You say, in your view, the American medical industry's marketing of cancer as a fight or war is incongruent with the patient-centric healthcare and each patient's harsh realities with this disease. And I've been saying that for years, and it's not just about cancer. It is about so many things that we are wanting to put everybody in the same box, and it doesn't work. It does not work. And what might be perfect for one person in the way of a treatment might kill them in another, or permanently damage them in another sense. So you have all of these things that are going on. Women often will talk about their husbands and say, my husband does not want to listen to me. He doesn't want to go in for the tests, etc. What would you want the wives of men who might be very concerned about the well-being of their husband, what would you want them to know so that maybe they have to give the guys in their life a good swift kick and get them off to the doctor for some tests and say, come on, we want you to stay healthy, so go in and do this. What would you recommend?
I appreciate the question, Donna. A bit of a sidestep first, and that is give men a bit of a break. We have this reputation that we don't care. I have met hundreds and hundreds of men with prostate cancer, and they all care. The thing is, throughout our lives, we're not told to care. Women learn early on about breast cancer, cervical cancer. Men don't have any equivalent of that in their younger years. Many, many men go for their colonoscopies openly and willfully. So we're not afraid of it. But with prostate cancer, what I think the message I like to give to women is, we hear the mantra, the dogma that this is an old man's disease, that most men with this disease will not die for it, will not die from it. Well, statistically, it's an interesting thing to look at. But at a personal level, cancer is cancer. It doesn't matter what kind you have, who wants any cancer. But we're seeing a steady increase now of deaths in this country, and the death rate is lowering, and we're seeing a number that's at about 34,000 this year, the CDC is estimating. And we have about 44,000 breast cancer deaths a year. So it's not a race to see which one's worse or better, but it's a large number. But the bigger number for the concern for men and the women in their lives is that we have nearly a 500,000 men on these hormone-blocking drugs. And we call it ADT, and it's androgen deprivation therapy, and that doesn't sound too bad. Or they'll say hormone blocking, and that usually gets people to perk up and say, what do you mean? But the actual medical term is chemical castration. So you have a 500,000 men on chemical castration. And I spent a year on one of these drugs, and they're life-altering. No man does this and wants it. No man's life is better. And there are horrible side effects. Some men not as severe as others, but no man's life is improved. And so what I would tell women is, your husband could be afraid because of all of the information. It begins with a blood test. Then there's a physical exam that can be uncomfortable for men, but we can actually get over that pretty quickly, particularly if we understand the physical exams women go through at a much younger age. And I think those are much more invasive. I learned that as a sole parent of my daughter. And then we face the biopsy, and we hear all these terrible things about the biopsy. And I make a comment in the book that they're not as bad as childbirth, or at least we're told this. Men can't know that, of course. But these are not things to be afraid of. The blood test is a simple blood test. And women have had many tests over the years where men haven't had any equivalent. You know, we're not even taught about testicular cancer. But this is out there as a threat to particularly younger men, but it's not taught to us. So encourage us to have a blood test. Encourage us that if we have a high number on the blood test, 3 out of 4 high numbers are not cancer. If we catch this disease early, the success rate is very, very high. The Australians just released a number that's quite interesting. The U.S. is not sharing this number. But what the Australians, and the numbers are always parallel, is that only 1 in 3 of diagnosed prostate cancers are stage 1. The other 2 stages are advanced.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we're 2/3 of all prostate cancer, it looks like, that's diagnosed is advanced cancer, which mine was because it got out.
Mm-hmm.
So the key is to get it early and then get the imaging, and women understand the imaging very well from mammograms you all go through, correct? So we don't need to be afraid of this. And then we have the information we need to make decisions.
Yes.
But if a woman is aware of how many men are on the chemical castration drug, I think I find women get very perked up on that one. And you don't want your man, your husband or your son or your father or your uncle to have to go down that path.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And,
well,
and you can tell us just how easy this test is. You have all been doing these things from younger ages.
Mm-hmm.
You women have, and men don't.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing for us to do. We don't know.
Well,
and I think that's why we're hesitant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm really glad that we've had this conversation, Murray Wadsworth, because I think that there are so many things that are false myths relating to men. And women, in my view, they want their spouses to be healthy. They really do not want them to be sickly. And so I think slowly but surely we are taking more of a positioning of let's be proactive. Let's look at evaluating ourselves. Let's look at taking care of ourselves so that we are going to be able to do what's necessary to stay healthy. And this is something that seems to be working on an individual basis. And you bring that out in your book, Prostate Cancer, Sheep or Wolf. Now, Murray, you have a website, and it's the title of your book, sheeporwolfcancer.com, and they're going to find all kinds of information there. You have taken a very proactive positioning with your own health, with your own life, and I think this is marvelous what you've been able to do, because if a woman is able to read this book and she can share it with her husband, and she can say, pay attention. I want you to be healthy. We want you around for a long time. And that was something that motivated you to really do some homework, because it has made a difference in your life, and you are still around for your family and your grandchildren, and you plan on being around for a good deal of time more. Murray, Keith Wadsworth, I want to thank you again for being my guest.
Donna, thank you very much, and thank you for helping share with men and women the realities around prostate cancer and what they can do to not become one of the negative statistics.
Oh, I agree. And I think being educated and informed about the different tests that are available, you give so much information in this book, and you could take it right to the doctor. So use a highlighter whenever you read it, ladies and gentlemen. Prostate Cancer, Sheep or Wolf. My guest, Murray Keith Wadsworth, we're saying goodbye, and check out his website, sheeporwolfcancer.com. This is Donna Sebo, and I am here in studio, and if you would like to give me a call, you can do that. The telephone number to call into is 253-582-5597. We're going to be right back. The Donna Sebo Show is heard weekdays, Monday through Friday, 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. Callers are welcome to call in during the second half of the program at 253-582-5597. Please note that the announcement is made at the bottom of the hour if I'm not in studio able to take phone calls. Warriors for Peace is heard every Wednesday from 7 to 8 p.m. For current information regarding my email newsletter, programming, and appearances, go to DelphiInternational.com. For information on publications, including my award-winning children's books, audiobooks, and more, go to Mrs. Sebo's Classics.com. This is Donna Sebo. If you or someone you know is an author and would like to be interviewed on The Donna Sebo Show or Warriors for Peace, please send a copy of the publication along with contact information, phone number, email, and website to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. That's The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. Please allow 6 to 8 weeks for review. Thank you. Well, tomorrow we're going to be talking about ghosts. We're going to be traveling to Long Beach, California, and we're going to be discussing about some of the haunting experiences in that part of Southern California. And believe me, there's a lot of reasons for a spooky situations in California. I was born and raised there, and Long Beach has a tremendous history, and I think we're just going to have a fun conversation tomorrow. Also, Thanksgiving week is coming up, and we're going to be starting off Thanksgiving week with God, Guts, and Gallantry with Dr. William Jocelyn, then the Conversion Equation with Terry Levine, the Spiritual Healing in Hospitals and Clinics, Sherry Edwards. Thanksgiving, I am going to take time to be with friends and family. So we are going to have a rerun of a program. And then on Friday, Black Friday, we're going to be talking about the healing power of pleasure. You know, I've got so many guests this month that are located in England. We're also going to be talking about the journey with plant spirits with Emma Farrell and how you can be your own medical intuitive with Tina Zion. It is absolutely marvelous how we are able to communicate with people in every part of the world and to share their lessons, the experiences that they've had, and so much more. So if you like us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter, you're going to find that my assistant, Deb, is going to keep you informed, and you will be able to find out who's coming on. But also, don't hesitate to go in if you have been busy, as so many of us are. My goodness, the holiday season, it just seems to explode with activity, with or without the COVID. I mean, even last year, it was just incredibly busy. And this year, it's the same thing. So what I would say is just know you can go in and you can turn on the player in the background because the latest 13 to 15 hours of programming is there, and you can just listen to one show right after the other. And then, of course, there's programs that are in the archives, and we've got hundreds of them there, so you can listen to anything whenever you like. That's our gift to you. And then remember, on the 1st of December, we are going to be putting out the newsletter, which will give us the lineup for the month of December. We're coming in to the final stretch of 2021. And if you're like so many people I know, it's like, yahoo! Let's go into 2022 and let's have some enthusiasm and let's get the show on the road. Yes. Also, I wanted to let you know that in December, the very first weekend in December, that there is an event on the 4th and the 5th in Bellevue, Washington, for those of you in Washington. In Bellevue at a resort, you can go to MeWeFairs.com, and you will find out all of the information. I'm going to be a keynote speaker there, both on that Saturday and Sunday, and I'm also going to be doing private readings, and I've got all kinds of things that I'm going to be taking with me over there. So it is going to be a marvelous weekend. The hours are 11 to 7. So I do hope that you will make a point of coming out. If you're in the state of Washington, just know that this resort that we are going to be doing an appearance at is absolutely going to be gorgeous, and we are really going to have a good time. So it's a great way to start off the holiday season in that enthusiasm, getting ready for Christmas and the sharing and fellowship with our friends and family that means so very, very much. When I first got Murray's book on prostate cancer, and he mentioned something as we were closing out the show about testicular cancer. And I can remember back in my 20s, I had never heard of testicular cancer. Well, my goodness, when you're in your 20s, unless you've been around the block of life a few times, what are you going to know? You don't know. Well, there was a friend of mine. Her name was Francesca. And she came in. I was at work this one day, and she said, "Oh, Donna, I'm just beside myself." She said, "My husband has been diagnosed with testicular cancer. And he was set up for very, very intense chemotherapy. It's been so many years, I don't remember exactly what was done at the time. It's been so many years ago. But the thing is that she came to me and she said, it really is not good. He's going through some treatments. He can't eat, so on and so forth. And I remember telling her, I said, sneak malts into, like a vanilla malt from McDonald's, sneak a malt in, grind up vitamins that can go into that malt. And because it's cold, and use vanilla, because the taste buds are affected with the treatments that they're getting. But he needs to have nutrition. And if you use vitamins, that's going to enable him to get through a lot of the difficulties that he's going to encounter, because what you've got is a toxicity, a poison that's being put into the body to get rid of the cancer. And she did that. And nobody at that time was paying any attention to nutrition. And I just got the information and I shared it with her. And after his weeks of treatment, and they kept him in the hospital because the treatment was so brutal, and he told her, he said, if it hadn't been for those malts, I probably would have died from the treatment. Now, that's quite a profound statement. But he encouraged her because he found that the body, because of the nutritional supplementation that was being incorporated into the malt, because your taste buds are seriously affected, he said it enabled him to get through the treatment. And this is something that I think as time goes on, we are going to find that we will be able to make an assessment, an evaluation of an individual when we are dealing with certain issues, so that we can have the nutrients that support the parts of the body that need that support, so that they can keep everything together as the action against that which is an invader, if you will, is being taken care of. And we are little by little changing our direction, our attitudes, and I think a lot of it is coming about because we as consumers are saying to doctors, what do you think about this, that, or the other? Now, I think I mentioned to you the other day that I had some friends over, and the husband had mentioned how he is finding that there are more and more doctors that are in Western medicine that want to know about Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine. They want to know about nutrition. And I can tell you, I have had doctors tell me when I share with them information about publications that have come to me from medical specialists, from nurses, from patients. I have actually had doctors tell me, don't bring anything like that to me. One doctor, and she's a young doctor, she said, Donna, if I were to read this stuff, I could lose my license. And I thought, now how tragic is that? Because medicine is always going to have to move forward. We don't know it all. And there are so many things that have to be researched and questions asked. Look at how many mistakes have been made in medicine because nobody was asking certain questions. And This is why it is so important for us as consumers to really be aware that asking questions is healthy. And I know a friend of mine, and this occurred a few years ago, she was going in for her physical and she was having certain challenges. And her doctor, which was a woman doctor, and my friend Betty, she's in there and the doctor wasn't paying attention to anything that she said. And my girlfriend, and believe me, I know this woman. I've known her since she was 20 years old. And she said to the doctor, "Excuse me, I am the patient. You are the doctor. You are being paid to serve my needs, and you're going to take the time to listen to what I have to say." Well, this doctor's eyes got as big as saucers, according to my friend, and she said the doctor went, okay. And so my friend proceeded. She had her notes. She went through every single aspect of her notes, and she said, "When I come to see you, I expect to have your full attention. I don't care how many papers you have to fill out. I want your attention because I want you to listen to me." And this is something a lot of doctors are complaining about, because remote viewing of patients is not enabling them, number one, to touch the patient. Number two, to be able to see visually what needs to be seen. And doing it on Zoom, people lie. They're not going to be able to do a good physical exam. And I had a doctor say that that was so frustrating to her. She said, "I need to see my patients. I need to be able to talk to them, see their face. I need to be able to examine them." And we've gotten so that it's, well, unless you're dying and you're in ER, you get maybe 5 minutes. And you go through all kinds of stuff, and it is not really a good physical exam. So it's up to us as consumers to take a proactive approach and say, "I want to be able to take care of myself. I want to be able to enjoy good health. I want to be able to have tests done so that I can pay attention to what's going on in my body. And if there is something that's given me a challenge, I want to be able to deal with it before it becomes a major issue." And this is something that I think is extraordinarily important. So it's up to us as consumers to really ask. If we don't like the physician we've got, find another one. And I can't tell you how many people, they're so afraid if they complain about the doctor that they're not going to be able to have good care. And I'll tell you what, medical personnel have really gotten disgusted with the whole system. And I can't blame them. These are men and women that have put their lives on the line for almost 2 years. And the lack of respect and regard for them on the part of the organizations that they have worked for is just, it's just total insanity to me. Total insanity to me. So we've got a situation here that's going to give us an opportunity to wake up and maybe look at finding a functional physician. And just like my guest, he had to go outside of the system to get the medical care that he needed. Now, he was in a fortunate position where he could do that. But I have known senior citizens that were not in a fortunate position that way, in their doctors, because they were in their late 80s or their 90s. These people needed relief, and they were basically ignored. And it's a very sad statement. So there's a lot of caring medical personnel, but we have to look at what we can do to be able to support those people that really care about their profession, doctors and nurses, specialists of all kinds, so that we can have a quality of care that instead of being one of the lowest rated in the world, we're going to rise above and beyond. which is what used to be the positioning in the United States. Donna Sebo here, 253-582-5597. I came across some information that really surprised me, and it happened to be about light therapy for dry eyes. Well, often, and if you're like me, you look at a computer screen, you might be working on the computer for hours, and before you know it, I know my face just gets blood red. There is that which radiates off the screen, and my face just gets very, very hot, and my eyes get very, very dry. Well, we forget to blink when we are looking at our screens. Well, in 2021, the FDA authorized pulsed light therapy for dry eyes. Now, what does it do? It improves the functioning of the meibomian glands, which produce tears. I'll tell you something else that can work very, very well to produce tears to help relieve the eyes, and that is Qigong. Yes, I think that that is something that is absolutely fabulous. Absolutely. Just fabulous. I recommend the Tai Chi. I think there are so many things that we can do that can enable us to have not just healthy eyes, but also to be able to move forward as we get older. So that is something that has come out for dry eyes and also for glaucoma. Now, there is an implant glaucoma monitor. It's called iMate, and it's an implanted eye sensor that can track eye pressure so doctors can adjust glaucoma medication doses remotely. Amazing. Something I learned from my eye doctor, which was really something. I had come across some information regarding a particular physician in Nepal who was able to do operations on literally millions of patients, and he trained a number of people to do the cataract surgeries. And in Nepal, cataract surgeries, I mean, children had cataracts, women were blind, it was just so tragic. And this man had been born and raised in Nepal, and he just was amazing, and he was able to be educated. His father made sure he went into India, and he was educated, and as a surgeon, he did an incredible amount of work, and he trained a lot of different people to help restore vision to men, women, and children in the mountains of Nepal. And it was very risky business. That's a very rugged area, as we all know. There's earthquakes, and it is just a very rugged environment. Well, I learned from my eye doctor when I was sharing information about this particular eye specialist and him working with cataracts. And he said, Donna, are you aware that the cataracts that people have in the United States are very different from the cataracts that occur in other countries? And I said, no, I just thought a cataract was a cataract. That's not true. You see, cataracts actually are dependent on the nutrition of the individual and what they have been able to eat. There is a different result in a cataract. I had no idea that was the case. Life, you learn something new every single day. Donna Sebo here. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Don't be afraid to question. Don't be afraid to investigate. Don't be afraid to stand up, to speak out, and to say, what if this occurred, that occurred, the other occurred? Don't be afraid to learn. You are the master of your fate, the captain of your soul. You are a light in this life, and we need every single one of you. God bless, be well, and hey, have a great week. We'll be talking tomorrow. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.